Hello and welcome to Liberal Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know right now if you're driving innovation across the worlds of business, design, tech, and culture. Today I'm joined by Nick Sherrod, co-founder and fellow colleague at Liberal Sessions. Hi, Nick.
Hello. Welcome.
And we're also joined by a wonderful new Liberal mate, Brendan Edgerton. Brendan is a product sustainability strategist who helps organizations turn regulatory demands and shifting customer expectations into innovation and competitive edge. With experience leading at the World Business Council for Sustainable Development and more recently 3M, Brendan is the person you call when you need to operationalize sustainability. Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Hello. Good. Doing fine. Thank you.
I have phones killed daydreaming and the fact that people daydream. There's a fellow for the American Enterprise Institute called Kristen Rosen who argues that we should be taking this idea more seriously. And do we think that we need to take action to reclaim our imagination? And I was thinking I could start with this one because I had a very interesting conversation yesterday, which actually brought this to my mind, which was we're talking about a new movie coming out 28 years later. And people were saying that when it comes to watching movies, they would rather go to the cinema now, which is ironic given the idea of like the death of cinema past COVID, because it means that they can't look at the phone. And so, you know, that sort of attention span comes to mind, and more people, myself included, are like trying to de-Pavlov's dog themselves, if you will, of like, even an inch forward, I need to pick up and look at it. It's like, I can't remember the last time I was well and truly just sat there, just bored.
Yeah. Or just like in the moment, right? Like, if you're watching a movie, just recognize, okay, I'm watching this movie, there's these others next to me. You know, the phones have become interceptors of our attention span, right? And you know, it's not an accident. I've certainly just in the last few months realized how much time gets away from me when I'm on the device. And so, you know, same thing, I'm trying to dumb my phone down as much as I can to, you know, just for texts, you know, just for phone calls, just for emails. And even the emails, I gotta, you know, you got to control it, right? Otherwise, it's nonstop. And be very cognizant when I pick up that phone, not to be distracted by notifications or things like that that get me sidetracked to take me to some social media platform. No, I'm picking it up to respond to this text. And when I'm done responding to text, I'll put it down. Easier said than done. But yeah, I, you know, since I've been doing that, I've actually had some time to think and reflect on things and come up with some other business ideas and concepts that, you know, I have to be away from a device in order to give that some thought. So I have seen the fruits of that labor, and, you know, I can't imagine going back to that full smartphone technology. I mean, I still have an iPhone, but I'm just trying to dumb it down.
Yeah. I think it's so weird, isn't it, that we all intuitively know that it has a negative effect. Like, I've been having conversations around this for a while. Like, then more articles like this are coming out. And I very rarely meet someone who goes, oh, no, I've got no problem with my phone. Like, I'm sure. like you, everybody intuitively knows there's something unhealthy about it. It leaves you feeling bad. I actually thought it was really interesting, even with the new interface, if you like, at the Apple developer conference the other week. It was clearly kind of designed to try and, it was looking ahead to a future where you're interacting through glasses and such, like, but moving away from the screen. It's almost like they invented this thing of this mobile phone that you kind of can do anything with. And even they are starting to design for a future in which it's less important. But I just find it really interesting because I think everybody recognizes there's a problem, but also it's so hard to move away from, because as someone who runs like innovation workshops and things a lot, it's really hard to get people not to be using phones and such like during a workshop or something. And you can also really directly see how it impacts people, because they, like, when people are half on phones or half getting messages, like, people's actual work is crap and we all know it. Like, but it's really odd. We all intuitively know that the phone's unhealthy, but we kind of can't yet crack away from it. You know, there's something culturally we don't know how to do.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that is tied, especially in the business context of like, you have to respond to this email straight away or this text that's coming through. But, you know, that inevitably leads to attention interception and then, you know, being driven somewhere else after you respond to that text or that email, you just can't put it down. It's a good point. You never see anyone that's just, I'm very happy with my 8 hours a day of phone usage.
Yeah, but I've been talking about a lot of people who work in tech as well, as you think might be like yeah, I've got this down. There's something about it which is just difficult. Although, again, the thing I find really interesting, you know, we're talking before about how there was loads of data around how much money was being invested in AI in China, and then it came out with DeepSeek and everyone was shocked. Like right now, we all say, hey, isn't it weird how unhealthy our relationship to our mobile phones are? But do you remember Nir Eyal's book, The Hook Canvas? It was massive for a while. It was literally called The Hook Canvas. And it was like, we've learned from how Instagram does things and you can get people hooked on your product. It was like, it was right there. We're designing products that literally hooked people based on their like dopamine cycles. And yet we've got to the point where a few years down the line and we're like, hey, that it turns out all these products are really unhealthy.
Yeah.
Bank apps that want you to look at how much money you have every day. That's a mental thing to do when people don't have that much money. Like, why did we do that? Like, it's just really, we literally all collaboratively created this thing that we've found is unhealthy. And are acting like it's somehow surprising. It's like of course it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the closest comparison is smoking, right? You know, it's not good for you. So it's hard to quit. People who go into smoking know that going into smoking, it's hard to quit, but they're going to do it anyways. And looking at it from that perspective of these things are designed and engineered to be addicting. How do we, then reverse that or allow ourselves to be free from that in some way. It's a lot trickier because it's, being applied to all parts of society, even young kids. And it's difficult to unweave from. But yeah, the data, the information is there in front of us. We know that these things are designed to hook us in, but it's still like, but maybe I'm different and, I can quit when I want to.
Yeah. And there's also a slight kind of, there's still that sort of legacy of that time when we thought all social media was just going to be really democratic and great. So actually it's funny, even in the recent Instagram brand campaign, they've done this thing where they have different creators talking about why they create. And there's a really interesting, to me, it really throws back to when you look back at old cigarette adverts, because one of them has this teenage girl in it. And she says, hey, I get really anxious about what people are going to think about me when I post online. Mm. Right? And the campaign then goes, essentially, hey, don't be scared by that. Do it anyway. And the right healthy response is, if you get really anxious about it, put your phone away. Like that's actually like that's in a moment where it's like, if you get really anxious about it, you don't need to. Nobody needs to do this. We just need to kind of like wean ourselves off it. It's not somehow empowering to spend more and more time on our phone. But I just think it's just interesting. So, that article that Josh is referencing there talks about daydreaming. And I do think you can really see the impact of that even in a work context. Because the reason why, if you try and run a workshop with people, and you'll know this, but actually, especially 3M, like this is the post-it note business is like the heart of like daydreaming, right? but the reason that it doesn't work if people are on the phone during one of those sessions, remotely or in person, is that actually the way people work is you have a discussion, someone starts daydreaming about something connected, hears something that somebody says, and you get that kind of alchemy of people going, oh, here's a slightly left field thought with the thing that you're doing. If everybody's getting sort of notified of different things and messaging at each other, you never get that happen. And in which case, we're just like a less good ChatGPT. Like people, maybe it's also that interesting moment. You prompt GPTs one way, but you prompt people in a different way. And actually, it's important for people to hang out with each other, and it's important to daydream, and it's important to sleep. You know, it's like people just need to sort of see this moment of going, how do people actually work? How do they work better?
Yeah. That's such a good point. Yeah, that kind of secondary, tertiary back of mind that goes on when you're really paying attention to something and, connecting, that's at best what you're going to get is a response on time to your question. And typically that answer to your question is half paying attention. And so, it really is kind of might as well just put something in ChatGPT and ask them, because it's not always the most constructive.